So, I'm very sorry that there was a gap because I was traveling and lots of things were not possible to record and send videos. So now I'm in Nepal and we'll try to send some of the videos. And first of all, I would like to answer some of the questions actually from chapter number 5, the concluding questions of this. And so to start with, the first question is, please can you help me to understand which is the best or several ways to help properly people the way they really need and not so much the way I think they need? Or how to avoid too much mistakes, as you have always helped me so much and I can also see that your teachings and support are powerfully helping all the Sangha and much more than our Sangha. I'm asking you please to give us an advice about how to properly develop the skill to help others just the way they really need and not to give the wrong tool, the wrong commentary, or too much or too less. I suppose it's a matter of our own practice and how much my practice is a genuine one. But maybe there are also ways to improve the communication, the output for the students and be more helpful as a teacher. And this is a very, in a way, a very difficult question because there's no one way or several ways to help people. As far as teaching the Dharma is concerned, I think what we can do is try to explain the Dharma as it is, not making it, not making it polluted or undharmic, really the teachings as they are, but then trying to explain it as much as possible that would be understandable to the people or that the people who are the audience or the people who might be helped would actually be able to practice them. So try to do that, I think, is important. And how much? I think there is nothing called too much or too less. It is more about how much. To make the people understand clearly about the practice and the need of the practice and the why it is done like this. So this, I think, clarity is, I think, very important. And also then, as we always say, we should not try to impose anything on others. We should try to teach or try to lead or try to help as the people, wanted to ask us. So therefore, I think this is very important as far as I can see, that we try to see and communicate with the people as much as possible. What they are interested in and what they want. and accordingly we try to, you know, we try to guide them or help them or share our knowledge or experience. We don't try to share our experience, knowledge that the people are not interested or not, you know, not want to know or not have any kind of interest or connection or, you know, sometimes people have also like aversion to such things. So we should not talk about those things. I think that's more or less the main thing, to try to try to put yourself in the place of the person that you are trying to help, and then from that angle or from that point of view you try to work with them. Then next question is, please can you help me to understand? Well, this is the question we have already. There's another question. My question is about verse 75. That it's wonderful to be in a state of mind in which you can praise others and not be deflected from this by the envy, jealousy and competitiveness that can arise. But if these negative emotions do arise, do you then do your best still to act in a positive way, praising others, and just acknowledge privately to yourself that you have to struggle with these habitual tendencies? Yeah, I think so. You know, when envy, jealousy and things like that arise in us, of course that's normal, because we are samsaric beings. Then we tell ourselves that this is not something good for us or good for others, so we don't need to, you know, we don't need to hold on to this, or we don't need to keep these emotions. We can let them go. If we want to praise others or not, that's another matter. If you are not in the mood to praise others or, you know, acknowledge or, you know, rejoice, if you cannot do that, that's okay for the moment. But actually, you know, since if you know clearly and deeply that it's better to rejoice, there's nothing nothing wrong in rejoicing, and there's lots of things wrong if you do not, and then maybe you would like to yourself. So, you know, the changing the attitude, I think, is the important thing. And there you need some reminding of yourself, and maybe also a little bit a little bit training. Training means reminding again and again, and kind of make it clear to yourself. Of course, you know, sometimes, and you know, not sometimes, you know, negative emotions do arise, so that's okay. You know, you just, when they arise, you know, it doesn't mean that it will not go. It will go if you don't hold on to it, so let it go. That's it. So the next question is, thank you for those teachings which sound so practical and helpful in daily life, but sometimes under stressful conditions, I find it hard to remember, put them into practice. Is it best to have a firm and strong resolve to accumulate positive deeds, or is it better to be more relaxed about it and to hope that in time it will get easier? Well, I think it is like this. You need to accept that we are not perfect. So we will have negative emotions, we have problems to apply all the good things that we want to, you know, experience or react. So therefore, when the negative thoughts, negative emotions come up, we don't have to become too, you know, like guilty or too stressed or too fed up or anything like that. But we also should know very clearly that if I too much act on those emotions, then it will be very bad for me and very bad for others. And some of the emotions could be very disastrous. So when you know that, you have to become much more clear, you know, much more stable. And then, you know, try to be also relaxed, because you cannot take it, you know, like if I have one negative emotion, I cannot say that, I have negative emotion. It's nothing like that. And negative emotions will be there for a long time for us, I think. So therefore, we should not be shocked, we should not be, you know, stressed, we should not feel guilty that we have negative emotions. We should work on that at the same time. Let it come, let it go, you know. If we react with that, sometimes it's okay. But be mindful, because it is not good for us and for others. So this is, I think, how we, you know, we we should be kind of ready to work on it in a long-term basis, in a relaxed way. Now, next question is, I have a question about stanza 87. When you say that we shouldn't give anything that could possibly harm us, or that we could regret, as I'm limited in money, like almost everybody, I was happy to find out that I could practice giving with the cells of my blood and my bone marrow. A donation of platelets is unpleasant, but the donation of bone marrow is said to be potentially really painful. Moreover, a general anesthesia can be dangerous, though problems are rare. Until now, I was convinced that it was totally okay, something unpleasant to me, to save the life of someone else. But a doubt has appeared with your comments on stanza 87. Could you please say a word about that? So it is like this. If you are really ready, first I think you have to see clearly what are the consequences of doing this. It's not good to do something without knowing. We have to be clear about the consequences. And if you are happy with the consequences, if you are really, you know, ready to, you know, go through the consequences and will not feel bad or regret, because your wish to help others is stronger or very important, then, you know, there's nothing wrong going through it. Otherwise, there is no obligation that you have to do that. You should not feel as if you are forced. You should not feel that because I have taken the bodhisattva vows, because I am practicing dharma, therefore I must do this. Because I have money, so I have to donate my blood. I need to do this because, you know, otherwise I'm not a good Buddhist or anything like that. That's not the way. That should not be the way. You should yourself decide whether you are really ready for it or not. Next question is, when referring to stanza 97-98, you talk about the importance of purifying our mistakes as soon as possible. I think that when I make mistakes, it is usually because a deep-rooted fear or anxiety is activated. Is it better to accept that this will inevitably happen sometimes and try not to worry about it too much? Or should I be actively dealing with it, doing my best to understand it, and be very vigilant in this respect? Well, I mean, it's like that. Of course, we all make mistakes. And when we make mistakes, if we can try to not do it again, that will be the best. If not, then we try to do it a little bit less, or, you know, even change a little bit. I mean, we cannot practically think or expect that we will completely transform all our mistakes or negative things in a very, short time. So therefore, it's a lifelong practice. So therefore, we have to accept our shortcomings. So we have to take them a little bit lightly, I think. Yeah. So the next question is, how can one maintain any confidence that one's positively motivated actions will bring about actual benefit and not simply get caught in the mess of cultural and conceptual barriers, so potentially causing more harm than good? So often others do not receive things as one intends, and the simplest of things can cause offense. Well, this is possible, but I feel that what I can do, if I have the right motivation, then I will try to do my best to make things right. And since I'm not, all-knower, I cannot say that I never make mistakes. I can make mistakes, I can do, lots of things which is not right or useful or beneficial or even harmful maybe. But I cannot do anything more than that because, I am the way I am. So practically, this is the idea. You cannot do more than your best. I think this is something we need to accept. And after accepting this, it does not mean to say that if I have good motivation, then I can do anything. That's not like that. If I have good motivation, then I have to try my best to learn and see if what I'm trying to do to help is really helping or not. I don't need to just do things. Sometimes maybe doing nothing is best help also sometimes. So therefore it's not that I have to do something all the time. That's not necessary. If I feel that what I do would be really useful, then I should do it. If I feel that I don't know whether it will be useful or not, then I don't need to do it. And if I feel that it is not useful or may not be useful, then why do it? Next question is, regarding stanza 102, how much contact and interaction does one need to have with their virtuous friend or teacher in order to progress swiftly? Is the level of contact required different in each of the three jhanas? Can one genuinely work on the path while relying on more than one teacher? This is, I think, person to person. I think this is person to person. There's no one thing, one way. There's no one kind of rule or procedure or anything like that. You cannot say this. I don't think there is kind of different requirements of how long or how much contact one should have with one teacher according to, this jhana or that jhana. It's not like that. So this needs to be, actually, you need to learn, you need to, receive teachings, you need to practice, and then, how much, it also depends on person to person, teacher to teacher, But there is, I feel, no thing as only one teacher. That I don't believe in. I believe that we need to learn from many teachers, as much as possible, as many as possible, and not only teachers, but from everything, from books, from other people, not teachers, and also, of course, from yourself, and then from teachings. You know, the main source is the teachings of the Buddha, and of course, the commentaries by great masters also. Next question, in stanza 109, it is said, what is to be gained by mouthing syllables? Although not directly related to prayers, this brings up the question, while practicing Vajrayana, is it best that prayers be recited in one's native language or the language of the composer? In other words, should one understand fully and have the possibility to actualize the prayer, or should one stick to the Tibetan even if it means one will struggle or understand, to understand or actualize their full meaning? If practicing with a group is the most useful language, the commonly understood language, or is a different approach useful for a group practice? This is the prayer is a prayer, so you have to make the prayer from your heart. So therefore, if you make the prayer from your heart, I don't think it depends. It matters in what language you do it. Mantras are usually in Sanskrit, and mantras are supposed to be in its original form because that's where the blessing on the mantras is on the words or the sounds. So therefore, that's where the, you know, it's not too much with the meaning. Of course, you should know the meaning and you should know how to recite it and things like that. But, you know, the prayer should be from the heart. So therefore, it doesn't matter in what language. and even if you recite in another language, but if you are kind of the essence of that, if you have in your heart, then it's the same thing. So the language is not a problem. From Buddhist point of view, all languages are equally, you know, good. Any language is good, it's, as long as it is the language of the heart. Thank you. I think this was the questions so far. Thank you very much.